Hello and welcome to this episode of DACB's NHS Estates podcast. My name is Terry Trapnell and I am a senior associate in the real estate team specialising in health. I'm your host and today we'll be talking about green leases in the NHS, what they are, why they matter and how to make them work in practice. I'm joined by Madeline Ball, a partner in our real estate team who advises across the NHS and wider public sector.
Hi Terry.
So, green lease is a term we hear a lot. What does it actually mean in an NHS context?
A green lease is essentially a standard commercial lease with sustainability obligations built in. For the NHS, that means the landlord and tenant agree to collaborate on reducing energy use and emissions, improving environmental performance, sharing data, and managing fit out and repairs in a way that supports the NHS's net zero goals. The NHS has a Green Leases Framework, which is a really useful resource. It sets out model clauses and practical guidance. It's really a toolkit that aligns with the NHS's net zero ambitions and helps the parties agree a workable framework and helps turn policy into practice.
I see. So it's not just about restrictions, it's about cooperation and the parties working together. That makes sense. So why is this such a priority right now?
Two big reasons. First, policy. As I mentioned, the NHS has committed to ambitious net zero targets, 2040 for direct emissions and 2045 for its supply chain. Estates are a major part of that footprint, especially with heating, ventilation and clinical equipment. Second, regulation. Minimum energy efficiency standards, or MEES, and EPC requirements are tightening. Landlords can't let properties below an EPC rating of E, and future rules are set to increase this. There is also a broader push across the market towards better EPCs, sub-metering, and data-led management.
So green leases aren't just a nice to have, they're becoming essential. Now let's look at the detail. What does a green lease typically include?
There are probably six key areas: governance and cooperation, data and metering, works and alterations, service charge and cost sharing, fit out, reinstatement and dilapidations, and finally, day-to-day operations.
Okay, let's start with governance and cooperation.
This is about mainly having a sustainability schedule that creates a joint forum, say an annual or quarterly meeting, to review performance and agree sensible measures. Crucially, it sets the tone. It's rather collaboration rather than confrontation.
And what about data and metering?
The lease may contain obligations to install sub-metering, share consumption data, and to allow audits. The lease should say how often that data is shared, in what format, and who pays for any new equipment. Without data, you can't manage or evidence improvements.
What would you typically expect to see regarding works and alterations?
Well, the parties would typically want to avoid leases that accidentally block sensible upgrades. So there should be a streamlined consent process for this. For example, LED upgrades, better controls or insulation. The lease should also clarify who pays and who owns improvements.
That makes sense. So if the Trust wanted to install more efficient lighting or controls, there would ideally be a fast-track consent process to allow for these works to be carried out. Okay, let's move on to service charge, which is often a hot topic. I know that cost allocation can be a tricky area. How does this work in practice in terms of the service charge and cost sharing?
Yes, it's an area that can sometimes be problematic and depends on various factors, such as the current state of the premises, the length of the term of the lease, but essentially what you're looking for is a fair framework with safeguards so landlords can recover reasonable costs for genuinely efficiency enhancing works that benefit tenants, balanced with transparency, consultation, and sometimes caps or payback tests.
So for fit out, reinstatement and dilapidations, I understand that it's about aligning materials, waste management and end of term obligations with sustainability.
Yes, for example, the parties should avoid ripping out perfectly serviceable, efficient kit at the lease end to retain beneficial improvements to the property.
I see. So this can reduce waste on the expiry of the lease.
Yes, a green approach discourages ripping out efficient fit-out just to satisfy a technical reinstatement obligation. The lease can allow the parties to agree that certain improvements remain with a value mechanism if appropriate. It can also encourage like-for-like repairs with efficient materials and avoid reinstatement where the landlord reasonably intends to refurbish anyway.
And what about operationally day-to-day?
These are things like commitments on waste segregation, water efficiency, responsible procurement, travel planning, and temperature set points where appropriate. These do need to be pragmatic for clinical environments and not so onerous that they don't allow for the usual operation of the premises.
That last point is important. These are healthcare settings. How do you square clinical realities with sustainability?
By being practical. For example, temperature and air changes in clinical rooms may be non-negotiable from an infection control perspective. So the lease should allow for clinical exemptions where necessary, but still push for improvements in non-clinical areas and plant. The trick is to focus on what's material and achievable for the particular building and service.
We often refer to light green and dark green clauses as well. What's the difference between them?
It's about really ambition and the level of commitment. So, for example, light green lease clauses are softer. They're more things like sharing energy data, meeting annually to review sustainability. Whereas dark green clauses go further. These are binding commitments to achieve EPC targets or install agreed energy efficiency measures.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, sure. Light green might say the parties will meet annually to review energy performance. These are softer obligations and, as I say, include things like sharing energy data. However, dark green could say the tenant must ensure an EPC rating of B within 24 months and implement agreed upgrades. These are binding commitments with cost implications.
That's a big difference and probably something that trusts need to be thinking about early on. And what about the different priorities for landlords and tenants?
Landlords care about asset value, EPC compliance and future-proofing against regulation and cost recovery via the service charge. However, tenants will focus on operational efficiency, cost control, reducing energy bills mainly, meeting sustainability targets and avoiding unexpected charges.
And how do you balance these competing interests?
It's about being transparent. The parties should be engaging and collaborating with one another. For landlords, this means clear mechanisms to recover reasonable costs for energy efficiency works with transparency and consultation with the tenant. But for tenants, safeguards like caps, payback tests, and clarity on who owns improvements are important.
Following on from that, what about the financial side? How do green clauses affect costs?
I think there's two main angles. Up front, you've got the capital costs for upgrades and metering. Leases need to clarify who pays and whether the costs are or are not recoverable through the service charge. In the longer term, there's obviously lower energy bills and running costs with a successful efficiency upgrade. Safeguards like payback tests and caps can help manage risk. There's also risk management matters too. If obligations are too rigid, tenants could face penalties for factors outside their control. So clauses do need to be realistic and proportionate.
Does the approach differ for new leases versus renewals?
Absolutely. New leases are the best chance to embed green clauses from the start. You can align design, fit out and operational standards with sustainability goals. Renewals, however, can be trickier because you're working within an existing framework. However, as part of a renewal process or re-gear, you can often negotiate sustainability provisions to include in the new lease, although your negotiating position may not be as strong midway through a lease term than when you're negotiating a new one. Often parties agree a supplemental sustainability schedule rather than rewriting the whole lease, and the NHS Green Leases Framework includes model wording for both scenarios.
That's helpful. Let's come back to MEES and EPCs. How do these impact NHS estates?
Well, as you know, MEES currently prohibits a landlord from letting a property with an EPC rating below E, and future tightening is expected, requiring probably C or B rating by the end of the decade. Poor EPC ratings can mean costly upgrades or disruption. Landlords may need to upgrade premises before granting or renewing leases. Tenants should check EPC ratings early, as a poor rating could mean disruption or cost-sharing negotiations. Green leases can help manage this by setting clear obligations for improvements and compliance.
And what about the main challenges that you see in this particular area?
Well, I think there are several, particularly cost recovery disputes. tenants may resist paying for landlord-led upgrades if the benefits aren't clear. Data privacy, sharing energy data can raise confidentiality concerns, especially in sensitive healthcare settings. You will need permission to collect and share the right data, including data from smart meters and building management systems. Also, clinical constraints, sustainability measures must respect infection control and operation requirements. And I think finally, enforceability, dark green clauses can be hard to monitor and enforce without clear metrics. Clear drafting and early dialogue are essential to avoid these pitfalls.
And what about the NHS-specific issues that people should be alive to? You mentioned clinical constraints.
Yeah, there are a few. Clinical operations can constrain operating hours for works and temperature ranges. There may be specific infection prevention controls that trump energy savings in certain areas. And the approval chain can be longer, with estates, procurement and clinical teams all involved. Also, the NHS has organisational net zero targets, so the ability to gather reliable data and evidence reductions isn't just a nice to have, it's foundational to reporting.
And in practice, are there any red flags that you often see?
Yes, a blanket ban on any tenant alterations that affect services or controls that can stifle basic energy efficiency tweaks. Also, service charge wording that only allows like-for-like replacement, blocking reasonable upgrades. And leases that talk about complying with the landlord's sustainability policy without attaching it or defining the scope. That's risky for tenants. Keep obligations specific and proportionate.
And is there anything else that trusts should be thinking about?
Yes, you should align the green clauses in the lease with your FM contracts. Support NHS procurement and sustainability goals. Decide on monitoring and reporting obligations. Build flexibility for future standards. Clarify interaction with capital projects. Include dispute resolution mechanisms. And provide staff training and awareness.
So it's not just about the lease, it's about the bigger picture.
Yeah, that's right, Terry.
Finally, if you had one piece of advice for NHS Trusts, what would it be?
I think that would really be to start early. Use the NHS Green Framework and aim for collaboration. The best outcomes come from shared goals, not rigid clauses.
Thanks, Maddie. That's really insightful. For more on green leases and NHS estates, check out our resources on the DACB website. Thank you to the listeners for joining us today. If you found this podcast useful, please do share it with your colleagues and subscribe for more. If anyone has any queries about what we've discussed today, please don't hesitate to get in touch with either myself or Maddie.